Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Here's the advertisement that Aeromexico had put on the air. I don't know where they're buying the ads. Presumably it's running during during U.S. programming in the United States, because it definitely seems to be focused on that. So here it is.
Nothing good ever come of them.
Oh, hang on. Let me start again. Here we go.
Borders. Has anything good ever come of them? Separation. Limits. I've seen as many as mankind has been able to create. Invisible borders. Human. Between men and women. Between the thin and the fat. Between those who make decisions and those who abide by them. I've seen borders formed by hate. For speaking a different language. For kissing other men. Or simply because somebody didn't want anything to do with the one next door. Borders in the name of God. Of the law. Borders. On land, they can maintain distances. But in the sky, they don't exist.
And that's the advertisement.
Excuse me. I have a job to do.
That's the advertisement from Aeromexico, as posted to YouTube, talking about borders and, you know, what is the use of these things? Are they actually benefiting people, or are they just keeping people apart? And then they break it down further to not just talking about, you know, national borders, but talking about sort of these divisions between groups of people.
When I was going to school, and from elementary school and middle school and things, there was more or less a giant blob of people, like 90%, a collective of people who would all get together, and they, you know, it was like, I think a collective was good, the normies, as we called, the normal people. And, you know, and the people who didn't fit into that, it was very difficult.
Now, where were you? Were you one of the ones who didn't fit into that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't. And, you know, I know that's cliche. Everyone says, oh, I don't fit in. But, yeah, I literally didn't. And, it's damaging, right? We're a social species. And then eventually, me and, you know, the other people who didn't fit in, it was hard to make a group because, you know, we all had our different things. We all just wanted to sit in our basements and play video games and stuff. But eventually, we did find ourselves a group, and it was just through the sheer effort. And I think it's just like the whole conformity, right? Because the people who wouldn't conform. And it wasn't, you know, some people would say, oh, well, that's good, right? There's always going to be some outliers. But no, because this kid who didn't conform, I remember he committed suicide. And this was in junior year, and all the people who conformed, right, the normies, right, the 90% blob, they all freaked out because somewhere in their psyche they said, oh, God, this is partially our fault because we didn't include him, because everyone was like, oh, I remember him, but no one really talked to him. I knew this guy a little bit. He had closer friends, but like all these people freaking out, aside from his closest friends and family and relatives in the school, they didn't know him. They didn't care. Anyone outside of her circle, they didn't care, but they all cried because that's what you're supposed to do, and that's how you would get out of class. And me, I got upset a little later on, but I realized, and it just made me sick because I'm like, look, you people, you don't care. Whoever's not trendy, whoever's not cool, you know, whoever's not relevant to you or your social life, you just cast out, you treat like garbage, and then when we're gone, when they finally just get sick of it all, you pretend like you cared.
I'm a libertarian, but I don't necessarily support free and open borders in the current climate that we live in. But my point is, I think if you were to get rid of the welfare state, the entitlements that we had, and also, stop creating refugees, you know, the whole Muslim ban, borders. When we set up coups and, get rid of Gaddafi or, the Syrian president, there's a vacuum for power, you know, just...
Sure.
Just basically, you know, that's what's going to happen. So you're going to have these two factions fighting for power, and in the collateral, you're going to have refugees created by this civil war. So we're essentially creating a refugee crisis, a border crisis, through these two means.
That's a good point.
You know, so I think we can, I'm not, you know, and to stop the conservatives, you know, I don't think that we, you know, should have to pay in blood for what we've done. But I think we should, you know, worry about our own at home.
I remember back when Libya, between the rise of ISIS and when Libya was bombed by NATO, and Gaddafi warned the West. He said, if you take me down, there's nothing stopping all these refugees from Africa and the Middle East into flowing and invading, or migrants, not refugees, migrants invading Europe. And so he got taken down. And I remember people saying, oh, well, it's good we have all these migrants coming into Germany because there aren't enough people working now. And these migrants will pay all the old people's, they'll pay their pensions, pay their salaries, and also they need cheap labor to work in German manufacturing plants. And so if you think about it, and these were politicians saying it at the time also. So if you, and you know, at the time I didn't put two and two together. These people who didn't, they, you know, for cheap labor, and then also in same in, you know, in the U.S. of Mexico, but these people, these globalists, I like to call them, you know, whatever people want, they created the crisis and they benefit from it.
Absolutely. And then you have people like Senator John McCain, who you know, go over there and pick sides and say, "Hey, we should arm these rebels with." And I believe this is very early on in the conflict with, you know, and I'm sure they have their own intelligence as to what's going on, but you know, we don't really know who these people are.
There's
to say
a picture
that we should arm one side or another, and then to he wants to go back and arm Vietnam. It sounds like more like an arms dealer than you know, some representative of our country, to be honest with you.
There's a picture of John McCain. Good points. There's a picture of John McCain with some of these, you know, back in back a while, I don't know how many years ago or even months ago, with a group of Middle Eastern rebels. And then now today, for some of the biggest terrorists in the region. Yeah, absolutely.
It reminds me of the old picture of, was it Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein from the early 1980s?
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly like that.
I was curious. I wanted to hear your guys' opinion on something. So everybody knows, obviously, that Syria is a big mess right now. I mean, Russia's involved, Iran's involved, the United States. Everybody has their hands in it. It's a big proxy war. So I would say I wanted to know if you guys thought that it would be reasonable for the United States to actually go into Syria and fight a war, and do you think we should do that or not?
Absolutely not. It's never a good idea to go to war, especially in a place that's not your own land. I mean, it's one thing to defend your own property. It's another thing to go and mess in somebody else's conflict. And we've seen historically that the United States has gotten involved in plenty of world conflicts. And ultimately, you know, more people died than otherwise would have, especially people from the United States dying than otherwise would have been necessary. And, you know, the way I see it is, if you feel strongly about what's going on in Syria, then go sign up and, you know, sign up with some military that's over there and go join up and, you know, go have fun. But I'm not interested in supporting it. Vincent, what about you?
I think, isn't that illegal to sign up and go for, as a
it's
US
illegal
citizen?
It's illegal to support terrorists, right? So you could go and join, like, the
Kurds?
No. But I'm just thinking, like, what's the old French organization, the Legion?
Oh, you have
or
to be,
like
a hardcore operator to join the French Foreign Legion. So.
But what I'm saying is, if you want to join,
I get what you're
someone,
saying. It's just very difficult.
As long as you're joining up some organization that's not on the enemies list of the United States, then the U.S. won't prosecute you, as I understand it. Karen in Virginia is on the line saying that borders are like a house. She says that the national borders, you should think of them like your house's borders. But you can't do that, Karen, because your house is a piece of property that you have control over, at least in theory. Of course, we want to get in great detail. Really, the government owns your house, because if you don't pay property taxes, they'll take it from you. You know, in theory, you own that that property, and you have the right to do with it what you want. If you want to build a fence, you can do that. If you want to put a moat around it, you can do that. But the national borders are, in a lot of cases, what's considered public property, and that leads us to what's called the tragedy of the commons, where you're constantly in a struggle, if you will, with other people who have different ideas about how to handle those particular borders. And so, you know, drawing that analogy isn't quite apt. Go ahead with your thoughts, though, Karen.
Right, but, you know, and the reason why I choose that analogy is to point out the fact that security is very, very important. And so just as your home, you want to secure it, your country, you want to secure it, you have, again, you have people We want to believe that all our neighbors are going to be friendly and kind to us, but there are people that don't agree with you. And so in this world, there are people, we have enemies, people that don't agree with you. And so
just because someone doesn't agree with me doesn't make them my enemy. I just like to point that out.
Exactly. But I go as far as speaking in regards to enemies. So you have people that don't agree with you and also would want to harm you.
Yeah, they usually are calling themselves the government, in my experience.
Companies that employ taxpayers and are run by taxpayers, they expect the government to defend them, right? That's why they pay taxes. And so,
well, they ought to stop that crap because it's
oh,
it's
no,
up
that's
to them.
Not... Okay, you keep bringing this up. That's right. Not an excuse. That's not an argument. Not everyone has the luxury of just stopping paying taxes, Ian.
No, I meant they need to stop begging for the government to protect them.
Then
it's
what's
the
point of them paying taxes? No, it is the government's responsibility.
It's not.
From foreign nationals working for the Chinese government, yes, it is responsible for the RCMP and the CIA. That's what the Canadian equivalent of a CIA is called, to protect them. Yes, it is.
No,
Ian.
It's not. They protect the government. That's what they do.
Well, no, they're supposed to protect the Canadian citizens.
Well, they don't.
All right, Chris, please enter.
Yeah, what I would say is there are two different types of way of looking at this. Either you have a government or you don't have a government. If you have a government, then you have assumed responsibility or you place trust in that government to protect you. That's one of the things. And that's
you've
that's,
made a huge mistake.
Vince had some compelling arguments. And I'm going to go to Mexico and their fence on the southern border with Guatemala. You never
that
hear
is
about
a myth.
That, do you?
That is a myth. Actually, Daryl mentioned.
You don't come into Mexico from either direction unless you want to go into Mexican prison. Okay, but
yeah, Daryl mentioned that once on the air within the last couple of weeks, and then he checked himself on it, and turns out that's a patriot myth.
Well, if you go down, dance over that border and just tell them you're there to stay and see what happens. Okay, but anyway.
So what are you saying there exactly? That the United States is supposed to be more like Mexico? Is that what you're saying?
No. They don't allow them in. Anyway, they got a big bias against their southern neighbors, Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua.
What's your point? Just because Mexico's tyrannical country too, is that supposed to make some sort of point?
Well, everybody needs to stay in their own lane pretty much. But let me hit this Mideast thing real quick. The problem with the Mideast is nobody's got a grasp of history. Very few people. If you say the Crusades to most people, they look at you like a cow looking at a computer. Okay. They don't have any grasp of this Islamic death cult that was fought for 1400 years. We're in the Second Crusades, guys. It's been going about 70 years now. But Trump is going to end it, and I'll tell you when it's going to end.
Oh, how's that?
Obama had all our carriers, I believe, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, around the election, every carrier was home at port. Now, those, I can guarantee you, pretty much, those carrier task forces are steaming, and you know which direction they're steaming right now, okay, once they're loaded up. Now, what's going to happen is the first good moon, okay, whenever Trump's ready, he's going to be tweeting about 3 in the morning, he's going to tell his generals, tonight's the night. They're going to light that, and everybody's going to agree. Okay, this Al Qaeda or whatever you want to call ISIS, it's a cancer. It's a death cult on people worldwide. Okay, that's going to go away.
Just because Trump can tweet is going to mean that he can go and get ISIS when the moon is right? I mean, what kind of nonsense is this?
What he can do is he can throw the might of the U.S. military behind it, and he can direct ungodly amounts of military force onto these things, but it's much more complex than that.
Of course it is.
Beyond the fact that when you bomb, you're bombing more or less indiscriminately. You're going to try to be surgical, but you're going to kill civilians in that.
Yeah, wedding party.
These
they've done all
happen.
That stuff.
Sure, which tends to create more terrorists, unfortunately.
Sure it does.
But the other aspect of it is the people in the Middle East know how to dig in. War is not a new thing to them.
Right.
And you look at how long we've been in Afghanistan.
Good luck bombing that cave.
Yeah. And look at how long the Russians spent in Afghanistan getting absolutely nowhere. So,
and spending how much, you know?
Yeah, trillions of dollars. This is what happened. And it'll be interesting to see where Trump goes with this. I'm believing, you know, as we as we talk about how Trump actually does what he said he was going to do, that he will
he's
do
at least
this.
Trying to.
Yeah,
he's doing something.
What he outlines does not surprise me whatsoever. It would not surprise me. Not all drugs are good. Some drugs have harmful effects, and I absolutely understand that. I just question whether the heavy hand of government is the right one to control the marketplace.
I agree with you. I think the market needs to do it. And, you know, to expect the government's going to be able to keep drugs out of people's hands who are going to abuse them, I mean, obviously, they can't even keep drugs out of their own prison. So, I mean, you can put down restrictions on the sales of these things, and it just forces the market to figure out ways around it. So whether it's restricting people from buying Sudafed to, you know, three boxes per month or whatever, or it's requiring identification for getting pills. You know, if you lock it down too much, then what you end up getting are pill trucks being robbed. You know, this happens where right. where a truck full of medications will be waylaid by a criminal gang, and they'll take all the pills and then go sell them on the black market, because the addicts are going to get their pills. They're going to do what they need to, which includes breaking into your car, stealing your car stereo, or, you know, your wife's purse, or whoever, you know, whatever was left in there, emptying it out, or worse, sticking you up with a gun or a knife to your back and emptying your wallet, and then taking that and getting the pills.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, if you're like me, then you really enjoy Free Talk Live and the message of liberty. Yet you also may not have a lot of time to listen to an entire episode of Free Talk Live. So, you listen to the Digest instead. If you enjoy the Digest, please donate $5 to $10 per month via Patreon, or send some Bitcoin or Ether instead. See the show description for details on how to do so.
I was just worried because I thought I heard something about legalizing heroin and methamphetamine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing to worry about. That'll actually help keep people safe.
Yeah, see, I'm fine with the legalizing the prostitution. You know, I think that can be regulated and controlled, and I think that would help.
Mm-hmm.
But I am worried about when it comes to those harder drugs, where, you know, people can get injured on those.
You know, the reason why people get injured is usually because they've overdosed, and the reason why overdoses tend to happen is because it's near to impossible on the black market to measure appropriately the dose that you want to take. And what I mean by that is the heroin buyer who's out there buying heroin regularly, they may be buying from the same dealer, but that same dealer is probably not buying from the same dealers all the time. So there's
right.
a chance that at some point the user is going to get a batch of heroin that is much stronger than they had gotten previously, and they might presume that it's going to be the same strength as the previous batch, so they'll take the usual amount that they take, and poof, you've got yourself an overdose case.
Or it's been cut with something like fentanyl or things
or,
like
yeah.
that can really do it. I think my biggest issue with the street heroin and that problem, it really is a question of quality control. There is no financial, a little financial incentive for the entire chain, you know, the supply chain for heroin, for
That's
example,
right.
to deliver a constantly pure, constantly consistent product.
Do you sure. think people might rob pharmacies, or maybe, you know,
I
you
like
said
that
earlier
idea.
That it wouldn't be good to sell to little children, but do you think their parents might buy that and then give that to them if that's accessible?
I'm trying to imagine what those parents are. I think
unlikely.
If the parents are likely to do that, they're more likely to take the heroin themselves.
Yeah, if there are drug addicts that have kids, it's usually the kids that end up being neglected by those parents as they go off on drug binges, and they're usually not plying their own children with their product, and legalizing it is not going to really make any difference as far as bad parenting is concerned.
But we've seen that too. I mean, that was some of the fear-mongering during the prohibition of alcohol. It's like, well, you know, our teenagers are gonna, you know, they're all gonna,
right.
you know, be able to, you know, when there weren't actually age restrictions on alcohol,
mm-hmm.
you know, got to keep this out of the hands of the children. But what happened? You banned it, and the same thing happens today. You tell an 18-year-old kid who's old enough to do pretty much everything else in the world legally except drink a beer. What's he do on the weekend?
Drinks
yeah.
heavily.
Right.
Drinks beyond the point of recognition, because in a lot of countries where there are lower drinking ages than the United States, you actually see more responsible behavior
sure.
out of young people.
What I think would happen if you legalize drugs is the same thing that happened in Colorado. I'm from Colorado. I just moved to Albuquerque about a year ago.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody I knew, my parents, my boyfriend's parents, a lot of friends who had never tried weed before, just tried it, and now they smoke it on a regular basis. So if you were to legalize all drugs. You'd have a lot of regular, nice people just trying it and then getting themselves addicted, and then you have loads of people addicted to these hardcore, very terrible drugs.
Yeah, I got to differ just based on my own experience. I'm a child of the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. so I think I'm the oldest host on Free Talk Live. But I grew up around all kinds of drugs. I lived in a very small town, but hey, we still had heroin.
Sure.
You know, we had heroin addicts and things like that. I've never felt compelled to try a whole lot of drugs that I knew to be dangerous then and I know to be dangerous now.
You could have gotten them then.
I could have. Yeah. Even when I was young and dumb, I didn't think that I would want to try certain things. Now, flip side of that was there were a whole hell of a lot of drugs that I did try and enjoyed many of them. But I think that's sort of a, you know, it's sort of a straw man. It's like if you make it legal, then everybody will try it and everyone will become an addict.
I don't believe it.
That just doesn't
happen. I don't know anybody who's hankering to try heroin. I mean, that you know, just waiting until it becomes legal before they'll try heroin. I don't know those people. And to put heroin in the same category as marijuana is kind of silly. Further, if you actually look at statistics and you look at teenagers, for instance, because that's what everybody's concerned about, right? The children. You look at young people and whether or not they are more likely to use marijuana in states in which they've been legalized. It turns out they go down.
Y'all were talking about what happens when, well, briefly, about what happens when people are let out on parole or probation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have a issue. I have a relative of mine who in 1996 committed a sex offense. It was a fairly serious sex offense, and he regrets it bitterly to this day.
Mm-hmm.
He was let out after 2 years. When he came out of prison, he came like a homesick homing pigeon to my place, which I just established after a particularly unpleasant divorce from my crazy ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to move in with me. I didn't see any problem with that, so I let him move in with me. But then came an issue with, in Louisiana, I don't know how it is in New Hampshire, but I'm sure similar, people who have committed sex offenses have to mail out the "Oh, come kill me now" card.
Oh yeah.
Mm.
And this was a really nasty event with suddenly a whole bunch of people deciding that maybe preserve their female children's virtue, that killing us was a worthwhile endeavor.
That's why a former co-host here on Free Talk Live, Rich Paul, when he was out on probation, he violated it, of course.
Right.
And when he went back in for the court hearing, he told the judge, look, I'm going to keep smoking pot.
Yeah.
So you can either just go ahead and keep me in jail. Like, how long do I need to stay in jail
to be off the hook?
To get out of this probation thing.
Right.
I'll spend whatever time I need to in jail so that when I get out, I don't have to have you guys checking my house out every, you know, week or however often it is that they feel like coming in there. And that's what he did. He went back, spent 3 more months in jail, you know, took it easy for 3 months, and then got out without 2 years left or anything like that. He had no more time left in probation because he was willing to do that. That, to me, is the sensible thing to do.
Yeah.
It's insane to say that it's sensible to stay in jail, but at least in there, you're not going to get you're not going to have a beer in your cell when they come toss it.
Right. It's the state of our world that going to jail for 3 months ends up being the rational decision.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's just insanity.
Dave, you were saying while you might agree with us on things like the war on drugs, you aren't necessarily on board when it comes to getting the government out of schools.
Education.
You think that the government needs, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong here, but it sounds like you think that taxpayer dollars need to go to education because it's good for society. Is that right?
I'd say I'm coming pretty close to that conclusion. I do mm-hmm. believe that universities train people that are useful to the community. That is, if you come out of it and you're a competent teacher, or you're able to build streets, or you're able to whatever they can teach you in the university, that will benefit us. Yes, I'm open to that. I think And not everybody will say, I don't walk on sidewalks. Why should my taxes have to pay for sidewalks? Well, you could argue that. But to me, it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
I do drive on streets, and I think most everybody else does. And you can't say to me, I don't drive on streets, so why should I? My taxes have to build and repair streets.
Let's talk a little bit about education, because I'll give you the point that the cost of college education has skyrocketed. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
I mean, compared to, you know, when my parents went to school, it was, you know, parents put away a little bit of money every year so that the kids could go to college, and they did. They got their degree, usually, you know, at least a 2-year degree. Most of them got a 4-year degree, just on savings off of one parent's income, because only one person worked. Now we have a system where, you know, I was looking at University of Humboldt, and it looks like it's about $38,000 all told to go there for 1 year.
That's expensive. In the case of the government funding all these student loans, for instance, the colleges at some level understand, the administration understands that if they raise the price next year and the year after that and the year after that, that they're going to keep getting the students because the state's guaranteeing to pay those, you know, to pony up the money for those loans. So there's no economic incentives for them to be efficient in the way that they do their business.
And I'll give you a good example here. Do you think many of the degrees that are offered by colleges now, and I'm going to jokingly say sort of like the women's studies, but there's lots of degrees out there that really have no basis in the job market, which was the intent of what college was supposed to be about. You're either going to go into academia, or you were going to go into some form of business or work for someone else. That's one of those things that drives me nuts, the degrees that are not going to lead to anything except for a lifetime of student debt.
Mm.
It's not the market speaking. It's people deciding that we would like to offer these things.
There's usually a sort of a large gulf of a difference between the reality on the ground, the average person and their experience and how they treat others, and especially people from other countries, and the way the governments of those countries act, whether we're talking about Russia, whether we're talking about North Korea, whether we're talking about America, or whatever we're talking about. The people are always generally nicer than the government is.
Well, that's a fair statement. My father was in World War II. And he was actually a code talker. And, you know, one of the things that he told us always growing up, wars are started for two reasons throughout history, politics and religion. And that's all I see going on right here. And the rest of us just need to figure out how to navigate all of this and let it go.
One thing I've noticed from the conservatives that I hear is their big thing is, you know, all these immigrants, they want to come here to America to exploit our welfare system. And, you know, would you accept them into your home and pay for them to be here? And now, my experience, where I work, there's the Burmese people probably about number the same as, you know, Americans, just about. You know, it's a very large community at the place that I work. And one thing that I've noticed is these guys, they work. They don't want a handout. They drive nice cars. They have nice homes. And they work their butts off just, you know, right alongside us. And as far as the, you know, the language barrier, you know, yeah, they hang out. They tend to separate themselves, you know, on break time and stuff with each other. But I don't see that as being a problem because they're contributing. They're coming here. They're working here. They're spending their money here. They're contributing. And I see the same with Mexicans.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.